Hey, Richard Gottlieb.
Chris Byrne.
How you doing?
Great. How's it going today?
We've got another repeat offender today, Josh Lorzel, who is one of the co-founders of Sky Castle Toys. They're doing a lot of great stuff, and they're really approaching the industry in an innovative way, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But first, this is the Playground Podcast with me, Chris Byrne, my co-host and cohort, Richard Gottlieb, and we are brought to you by Global Toy Experts, The Toy Guy, and Beacon Media Group. And Josh, welcome back. Last time we talked like this, we were in Nuremberg. Yeah, it was a month pre-COVID. I think I'd had COVID in Hong Kong, came home, turned around, went to Nuremberg. So I just spread COVID around the globe.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
You're welcome. You're welcome. But seriously, last time we spoke, you were with a different company. And since then, you have established Sky Castle Toys. Why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about your background and then how Sky Castle came about?
Sure, Chris. My background, I started in the toy industry in 2007. So I had quite a few toy fairs under my belt before COVID kind of ruined my streak. Cut my teeth in operations, so and then moved to sales. And then, you know, as you do working for smaller companies in the toy industry and probably all hardline industries, you got to wear a lot of hats. So wearing the operations hat to wearing a sales hat, which what I've done most of my career, still do a lot of sales. And then also wearing a marketing hat for part of my time at a company called Zing Toys, who are still really close friends of mine. And I worked at Zing for 10 years. And I learned a lot there. And during my time at Zing, we started doing a lot of social media. We did a lot of incorporating social media within the products, but be that considering it on the front side, whether it be a trend that we wanted to leverage or looking at a toy from the play pattern could leverage into an existing trend. And then also using social to promote those items. And so learned a lot there. And that's where I met Levin Nelson, who's my co-founder. We worked together at Zing during our time there. Fast forward to August of 2020, and we said, as pandemic, perfect time to start a toy company. Let's do it. We thought at the end of 2020, you know, everyone's going to be jumping out there. It's going to be good. 2021 is going to be great. You know, we'll hit the ground running. We'll be ready to rock and roll. And of course, we didn't foresee a global shipping crisis that happened last year and made it, you know, very tough. So it's not been the easiest time to start a toy company, but you know, we're doing well. We're having some exciting stuff happen. And, you know, we're just like everyone, we're trying to, you know, look at the silver lining and the bad things and look for the opportunities where they are. Now, so far we're surviving. So that's good.
Tell us about your company.
Sky Castle Toys, innovation with integrity is our motto. Just from all the toy industry that we've seen, we really wanted to do things the right way, supporting our partners, making sure that all of our relationships be that with buyers, suppliers, factories, all the different components. You know, we wanted to make sure that we carry our business with integrity and treating people the right way. And that's a really important part of it, but also focused on innovation. You know, it's not, we didn't want to do this to go find OEM products that exist in China and put our label on it, put the Sky Castle logo. We did this to get the excitement out and the challenge of innovating, of finding something new. To be a trailblazer and innovate is very, very scary because it's a lot of money, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort. The things that you think kids are going to go crazy for, they don't like at all. And some of the stuff that you think isn't going to be well received is super hit. So that's part of the game. And we try to be an innovation leader as much as we can. And that's that thrill and that challenge is what drives Sky Castle. And that's why we do it.
Can you describe two or three of your toys?
We launched our first item was called Let's Glow Studio. We launched in August of last year, so about a little over a year ago. And it basically utilized retro-reflective material that you would find on a safety vest, per se. Like, you ever notice when you're driving at night and there's safety cones or someone wearing a safety vest or it's a biker or a runner has it on, that material has microscopic glass beads in it. So when you shine a light at it, those beads reflect the light directly back to its source. So when you're driving, because your eyes are aligned with your headlights, you'll see a person light up. That's why it works as a safety tool. So we kind of repurposed that technology to put it into materials for kids to make craft kits with, so that when you put a light on by the phone or your tablet or your computer, and that would be next to the camera, so your phone would effectively see the light when it reflects back off the material. And this was a trend. This was kind of taking advantage of a trend at the time called the glow stick challenge on TikTok, where kids would tape glue sticks all over their body and they'd activate them, turn the lights off, and then it looks like a dance, really cool dance moves because all you'd see is the outline of the skeleton that they put on. So we thought, man, that's really cool. But, you know, it's annoying to be taping glow sticks all over your body and they're a one-time use, you crack them. So let's make something that's that can be more precise with the designs and, you know, more intuitive. And that was how Let's Glow was born. In January of this year, we launched a product called Doodle Jams. And so basically it's kind of a modern day Woolly Willy. If you remember that Woolly Willy classic toy where it's a clown and you have magnet shavings, you can give a mustache and eyebrows and those things. But we took a, we applied a sensory aspect to it. So instead of utilizing magnetics to make the shavings kind of create art, we instead vacuum sealed 2 millimeter soft TPR beads into a frame and with some clear gel so you could manipulate and create art over your, so your same kind of concept, but it didn't need magnets. The beads stay in place by being vacuum sealed.
So talking a little bit about Let's Glow Studio and the idea of you seeing kids pasting glow sticks to themselves. And there was that entertainment group Illuminate that was a big hit on America's Got Talent that had those expensive suits and they did a tour and they did all of this stuff. But it's a pretty big leap from glow sticks taped to your, to a sweatshirt to this reflective material. What's your process by which you look at a trend and then try to interpret that into a toy? And how do you determine which trends you want to explore further?
Well, I mean, that's kind of alluding to what I said in the beginning. There's not a per se exact science to determining which trends. A lot of it's gut feel. When we start identifying these trends, we look at how, like, the stickiness of it, how many people are commenting, the engagement, not just strict views, although views are always important, but also the engagement. How much fun are people having? What are people commenting? Man, I'd love to do this. Man, I wish I could do that. That's tough. You look for kind of comments like that. But how can we invent a better mousetrap? How can we make it easier for the consumer or the 8 to 11 year old girl to take that trend and be able to jump in the fun and make it a simpler, more streamlined process of how to do it. And so once we identify that, you know, then it's looking like, okay, what methods could be possible? In the case of this, it was the safety material. And we were blessed in this sense. My co-founder Lev and his father Webb had already patented this technology for use in the outdoor toys arena, like lighting up. They put the material on footballs and then they put the light by their glasses. So when you looked at the football, it would light up. So it was a very cool product that Nerf launched it, I think, in 2010 or 2011 called Fire Vision.
Right. Remember so that?
Yes, we had the technology, but it didn't work because the one, you know, as you like sometimes happens in toys, we never asked ourselves, do our parents going to let the kids go out at the pitch black at night outside in the field and throw footballs around? They're 8-year-olds. No, the 8-year-olds aren't, you know, your mom said when it's dark out, you're coming home for dinner. So, you know, that, but that line never really worked because of that. You know, sometimes you get so honed in on the product and making this magic happen that you're like, should we, are kids going to be able to even go out at night and do it? So, but we always kept that technology in mind and we were looking for an application for it. And so when we saw the glow stick trend, it was kind of a perfect marriage of a technology we were trying to find that was magic, but we didn't have the right application for. And then finding now this trend that we can match up with this really cool tech to find the right application for. And that's how we feel like with Let's Go Studio.
And the Doodle Jams is Woolly Willy. It's a classic play pattern. Kids love that. But you also took advantage of another trend that's out there, which we've seen a lot of, which is ASMR, which is a lot of fiddle toys or doing something like that. You're not just a fidget spinner, though you had some success right at another company with a fidget spinner. So you already knew that was out there, but taking that to the next step and turning it into a classic toy, talk a little bit about that.
Sure. No, actually Doodle Jams has quite an interesting origin story, if you will. During the pandemic, you had this kind of unique situation occur where the schools were shut down, which, you know, it's never happened. And so you had kids now stuck at home and parents trying to find things to do to keep their kids busy all day, you know, when they weren't doing lesson plans, you know, like, and so one of these moms, they're really crafty. There's a lot of different hashtags and different sharing sites, whether it's Etsy or different channels on TikTok or Instagram, where moms come up with cool ideas and they share them. And it kind of becomes a trend in its own from mom to mom sharing ideas. And, you know, a lot of moms were trying to come up with cool ideas to keep their kids occupied. And, you know, a bunch of moms came up with the idea, let's take freezer bags that we have at home and we could take different things like cotton balls and other stuff that's laying around the house and we could stick them in these freezer bags and then take our meat vacuum sealer, and they'd vacuum seal this freezer bag, but they'd stick paint, all kinds of different stuff in these freezer bags. And then they would give them to their kids so they could have a sensory experience, but there would be no mess because the things that are vacuum sealed were all vacuum sealed within this freezer bag. So these bags that were vacuum sealed, and you know, it was a massive trend, all these moms sharing how to make, put them together, how to do them. And so we were watching this trend grow and grow on Etsy and all these other places. And we're like, man, this is really, really cool. It's sensory. There's some art element to it. It's mess-free. How could we take that and apply it to a toy idea? And in the case of the toy idea, you know, we didn't like how the bag was very, you know, the ones that moms were sharing and doing were just loose bags because they're not trying to make a retail item. They're just trying to make something that's a sensory experience for their kids. So the challenge for us on taking this trend and making a toy out of it was we have to make it feel more valuable because just a bag, a little plastic bag with a bunch of stuff in it, it's going to be like 99 cents maybe, you know. So we had to see how do we upscale it and make it a toy, you know, how do we put the work in? So that's how we came up with adding it to a frame. So now we took the idea of things vacuum sealed and we put it into a nice frame. And we came up with a stylus that you could move around like you're drawing a drawing utensil that could work, although kids use their fingers too. And so we saw this trend, and then we wanted it to be soft and squishy, so we had some work to do. The beads that we put into our Doodle Jams are 2mm TPR beads, which actually do not exist. You know, a lot of companies, when you're doing the product development process in China, you're kind of cobbling together as much as you can things that already exist, so you have less tooling. So what does exist in 2mm size as a sphere, a spherical shape, is glass and plastic. But we want it to be soft and squishy because on the trend that you brought up, ASMR, part of which is very audio driven, but it's also sensory driven. And that squishiness to sensory is, you know, is very, very big part of it. So we had to custom tool and figure out how to make beads that were actually soft, which is one of the challenges, first challenges we had. We felt like it was worth it because the experience in the end was very true to what the trend was, which was sensory, squishiness, you know, being able to manipulate it, but still create art. And so that's why we were really compelled by it. And so it's been a real big hit so far. It's been exciting to see kind of all those things come together.
Where did the name Sky Castle come from?
I bought this house in 2014 when I was working at Zing Toys, and Levin and another guy, Alfred Emanuel, who works for a company called License to Play out of New Jersey. They're our distribution partner. Levin and I all worked together, and we all wanted to be roommates because we're all single guys. So I bought this house in 2014, and they were my roommates. And the house that I still own it now, that's where I'm actually podcasting from today. And the house is on a really high point in Portland called Council Crest Park, which is kind of like overlooks all the west side of Portland. And Portland gets a lot of, besides the rain that we're all know, the cloudiness and rain Oregon gets, we also get a lot of fog in the mornings, and it'll usually burn off in the afternoon. So this house where it's situated, the fog rolls in, and some mornings it looks like you're on top of the clouds because the house is just there and all you see is an ocean of clouds in front of you. So Levin used to always call it the Sky Castle. And we actually even had a GPS back in the day on Instagram. You could tag us because we were young guys. We had a couple more party or two over here. We could tag it as the Sky Castle. And we'd send people the GPS on Google Maps. You could do, literally, we had a location Sky Castle created. We'd send to people when they wanted to find the house. It's kind of hard to find. So, you know, we decided to make the jump and make a toy company. It really felt appropriate. I mean, I met my wife and Levin met his wife both when we lived here as roommates too. So, you know, kind of a lot. And we made the decision to branch out on our own and take this big risk to start our own company, literally when we were all sitting on my deck at the Sky Castle. So it was like, it just made a lot of sense. Let's call it Sky Castle Toys because this castle, this house has been a part of our lives in so many different ways.
You said earlier that you had to wear a lot of hats, gone through really tough couple of years with just getting goods to market. How did you do managing the supply chain?
A lot of sleepless nights trying to negotiate container rates. I mean, it's, I would say, everything's connected. Obviously, you have the pandemic. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on the challenges of 2022, but looking back the last 2 years, let's say, is enough. I mean, you had the COVID challenge, which was tied in the global shipping crisis. And in my opinion, the global shipping crisis in a lot of ways was and has still been more challenging than even COVID in a lot of ways. It's been very hard. Obviously, when the containers cost 6x, 7x, 8x in price, You know, how do you manage that? You have to do price increases as much as you can, which is very tough in this industry. It's very, 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 very difficult to raise prices. Certainly a mid-year price increase. You know, they always say like December is your time when before you print your January price list and go start going to all the gift shows. That's your time to raise. You get one time a year in the toy industry to raise price. That's your January price list. You know, if you do a mid-year price increase, it's there's usually a revolt among your sales reps and your specialty toy partners. So, but you know, everyone kind of had to do it. So you had to raise prices, but you also had to try and be creative. I mean, we would look at other routes, rail goods from the factory base, which is Shenzhen, Yantian down there, and rail them up to Shanghai and bring goods in on a different line that maybe would be quicker. You know, it wasn't just the price, but it was also the lead times, which I actually think was even worse in a lot of ways than the price. You can make a good argument because goods that would take 3 weeks on the ocean to get to Port of LA or Port of Seattle, they take sometimes 4 months. Because the boats would just sit at port. So what that happens is I think a lot of the challenges at retail we're seeing this year is because all the Christmas stuff didn't show up for Christmas. It showed up in Q1. So now you have $80 play sets that is that's a Christmas purchase that are all flooding the inventory channel. I mean, when I went to some of the big box retailers a week ago, they still have some of the closeout aisles look like a January closeout aisle that you'd see after Christmas when all the stuff's kind of being cleaned up. I mean, we have so much, and this is not just a U.S. thing, it's global. I mean, you have so much channel inventory flooded from everything showing up late. I mean, as you guys know better than I, you got November and December, and that's your sweet spot. I mean, you got birthdays, you got lots of events, you got Easter, which is a nice bump. You know, for summer toys, you got the summer season bubbles, those things. But really, your hay is made in November and December. And if you miss that window, these goods, it's going to take a long time to move through them all year because that's just when people buy toys. November, December, that's the big spike. So I think we're dealing with a lot of challenges there. For us, we had to really remain lean and tight. You know, we're fortunate being a startup that we have one employee and it's me and Levin and I. So it's three of us. And we work with a lot of consultants. In this kind of environment, that can be good because we can flex up or down. With contractor base, we can scale to kind of where as the business flows the last 2 years, which helped us. But no, it's been a massive, massive challenge for sure. And it still persists. I think we're still seeing a lot of the repercussions of that this year. You know, the freight's much better now. The rates have gone down. It's more stable on timelines. But I think the channel inventory being flooded is still a big issue. I think till middle of next year, we'll be kind of getting through that.
And we're going to take a quick break right there. You are listening to the Playground Podcast with me, Chris Byrne, my co-host and cohort, Richard Gottlieb. We'll be right back. The Hong Kong Toys and Games Fair is back in a big way. With the relaxation of quarantine measures, Hong Kong will be the place to be January 9 to 12, 2023. The 49th edition of the fair will once again be the ultimate showcase for the international toy industry. If you can't make it in person, the integrated online show runs from the 9th to the 19th. I'm Chris Byrne, the Toy Guy, and I can't wait to be back in Hong Kong and hope to see you there. More at hktoyfair.hktdc.com. And we're back. This is the Playground Podcast, and we're continuing our conversation with Josh Lorzel of Sky Castle Toys. I want to shift gears because we've talked about you finally getting the stuff into market and the challenges of doing that. But once you get on shelf, there's a bigger challenge, which is getting it off the shelf and into consumers' hands. One of the things you guys have been very successful at is creating organic social media marketing. And when I say organic, I mean, you're not paying for it. You're not paying influencers for a post. You're not going to the Kardashians and say, hey, play with this for $1 million. You are actually building community. And I think the industry would like to know, how did you do it? Because it really is kind of the holy grail in today's marketing environment.
Okay, that's a really good question, Chris. There's some nuance and detail to it. So I might rattle on here for a little while with some of the some thoughts on that. So you guys just stop me. But I would say there's really three verticals when you're looking at social content and how to use that to drive awareness of your product and excitement and interest. All three can apply to products, and maybe sometimes one or two apply. And maybe a product could be really good. It kind of depends on the brand and the product and the demographic you're trying to reach. But in general, there's three kind of verticals, I'd say. One is partnering with influencers. This is kind of what the big kind of hot button topic is now, getting influencers, whether it's YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, fit your toy within the parameters of the types of content that they do and they release. Now they become a voice of authority to their audience to say, hey, X item or X brand or X toy or X product is cool. I like it. I endorse it. This is kind of the big trend now, and that can be paid or unpaid. Either way, it's kind of a using an influencer to drive that awareness. That's one. The second being user-generated content, or UGC. And this is, no, I don't want an influencer to tell people that this is cool. I want the kids themselves to be the sharers, the content creators. The kid, the end user, is your content creator. They're sharing, and other kids are seeing it. This is like the, I know you guys know the old school way we used to sell yo-yos or paddleball. You'd have the street team, and the cool kids show up in the mall, or they show up at the high school, or the, I guess when we high school, be a grade school or junior high, and they have the yo-yos, and they all look cool. So it's a peer-to-peer marketing where I want to be like that cool kid. That's more of a user-generated content approach where everyone who buys our toy or our item, we want them sharing their experience with it, and then that becomes your wave of influence. That's almost like a micro-influencer play. You're looking for a lot of people sharing content across a wide range thing. Not every product can work for that, but that's its own kind of vertical. And then the final one is you yourself, the brand, create your own content. You release your own content on social, which is exciting and cool, and it's funny, and it has a neat swing on it that makes people want to check your product out and buy it. Going back to the first, which is influencer partnerships, I would point out a product that Lev and I worked on called Wethead back in the day, our days at Zing. And the item was an old item that before Zing did it, it was 10 years previous. It had been a huge failure because there wasn't no social media. So you'd have this hat and you put it on, and there was a water reservoir on the top, and there was 8 different pins, and you'd spin it like a Russian roulette, and each person would take a turn putting it on and pulling a pin, and only one of the 8 pins dropped the water on your head. And they launched this item before there was social, and it was a huge failure, actually. And Zing relaunched it, I think, 2014. And by then, social was a big part of everything. And this was kind of playing after Pie Face from Hasbro did a similar thing on this. People had so much fun. They would buy your product, and they would post a video of it. But really, the success was sending it to influencers. So these influencers would take it. They would have an influencer challenge against another influencer, like a hey, let's go on our show, and let's both put the hat on and see who gets wet. And the influencers would go back and forth. And then we basically were able to partner with influencers. One famous one was an influencer called Family Fun Pack that we sent these wet heads to. And they put it on one of the little kids in the Family Fun Pack, and he started crying when he got the water on his head, and it went viral. I mean, we had 50 or 60 million views. And then a lot of influencers saw that influencer do it, and they wanted to do it because they're like, hey, they're getting views. They got 60 million views off this post of the kid getting wet from the head. Let's also, because, you know, ultimately an influencer that you're partnering with, their goal is to get views and engagement from their audience so they can grow their audience. So if you can convince them that your product fits within their type of content, which is always important, by the way, I tell companies that ask advice, make sure that the influencers you're reaching out to, it makes sense. Your product or your brand makes sense for the type of content. There's influencers of every variety, every type of audience. So you have to find one that matches. But in the case of Wethead, because it was so demonstrable visually, you looked funny when you got wet. We were able to convince the influencers that their audiences would have fun seeing this creator, this famous person, if you will, this influencer, look funny getting wet. And so we were able to get them all to post videos and grow a brand. For the second option I said, which was user-generated content, UGC, we kind of cut our teeth on this back in the day on a StickBot, but we also used this for Let's Go Studio, which was to get the end users to create original content themselves and post it on their channel at a hashtag. Hashtag StickBot, hashtag Let's Glow Studio. And the hashtag was important because, and still is, because it's the one, it's a common sharing place where anyone can see it and find the content readily and easily. When they look up hashtag StickBot on their phone in the store, they see all these videos created by other kids. Or at Let's Glow Studio, you go hashtag Let's Glow Studio, you'll see other dance videos, other content of kids using it, which is organic because it's you're getting the users themselves. There's no opt-in, there's no purchase. It's just they like the content that they're able to create with your item, and then they share it. So they become your advertisers in that sense. You're getting the users to make content and post using the hashtag so they content can easily be found by others. That's the second. And finally, the final example I gave was for the brand itself to create meaningful and exciting content and then post it. Anyone can create content around their item if you find the right one. And so the case of this would be Doodle Jams that we launched now. So we launched Doodle Jams in January, and we were at zero followers, zero engagement on TikTok. And we've grown that to, we've had 150 million views this year onto our unique hashtag, another 100 almost on Instagram. It's about 250, quarter of a billion views of Doodle Jams content, which is quite incredible, actually. And if you look at our content, it's every piece we create ourselves. The way that we were able to have success creating our own content was, in the beginning, we tried lots of different things. You know, we had some content that we created that was this beautiful stop motion animation content that was literally every buyer, every sales rep, every industry person in the build up to the launch that we showed this stop motion content to, they said, this is the one, this is going to drive it. This is going to be the hit. Every kid's going to love this. We posted that and it got nothing, literally complete failure. But then we didn't stop there. We weren't satisfied with just trying everything on one type of content. So we tried lots of stuff. And it turns out these stressed out people in America during COVID lockdowns and inflation and every other stressful thing that was happening in January of this year, we had a content where we took the beads, and the Doodle Jams come with three colors, but the factory mixes the beads together. So we sell it as all the beads are all kind of jumbled in a big soup, and you have to kind of separate them. And we had a video where we just separated the beads into their own color, like literally just spent 30 minutes separating the beads and fast forward it. And it literally went viral. Our first video got 20 million views on TikTok. our partner, Rick Durr, owns a Learning Express in Lake Zurich. Rick posted similar content. He went viral. And so we were like, okay, we are onto something here. People like watching the hands actually do the work, seeing the action from start to finish. You know, they're stressed out. These stressed out people love watching bead separation. And that gave us the end, because we tried lots of different things in those early days. We were able to hone in on, for this brand, for this product, what type of content were people responding to, and we could shift our focus of creation to that content that worked. So we have become an influencer in our own right. People follow us to see the new things that we do creatively with our product. And so that one can be a little more elusive, but it's another way to do it.
Essentially, you've got your consumer doing your work for you, which is word of mouth accelerated by technology. When you talk to buyers who may, and less, but when you talk to a buyer who is in the TV promotion model, yep, how do you communicate the impact of the kind of social media in terms of driving sales?
Chris, it's so funny. This is such a good question to ask me, because utilizing social to drive awareness, literally since 2015 or 2014, I have seen such a shift. My role at all the companies I've been at is I deal with buyers directly. So any Walmart meeting, any Target meeting, any mid-tier level, even I go to all the trade shows. I'm in the room with buyers across all these companies, across all the things that I've done. And so I've been able to get a lot of direct feedback and see how this acts. And so as recently as 2014, 2015, you had to go into a big box retailer, exactly like you said, with a GRP plan. Here's what we're going to run media in August to get initial test on it, to get a bump, to see what our Christmas, you know, you can extrapolate based on August sales, what you think November, December is going to be. So everyone's running media in August and you're chasing it November and December. And buyers want to see that GRP schedule and what networks, you know, are you on Disney XD or you're on Nickelodeon, whatever. Like, that was the way it was done. And the first year I came in with the StickBot idea and had a hashtag, I had to educate. There were several slides educating what a hashtag was. It's funny now you think about it. It's like so ingrained now, but even buyers had to figure out, what is a hashtag? What is it was Vine back then, before Vine is gone and TikTok's the new Vine. It was, what is Vine? Why is that relevant? And so you had to show them these views and these engagements. There was an education process of buyers because they were skeptical. And it was kind of looked at in the toy industry and by buyers in the toy industry as, oh, they're not big enough to do TV, so they're doing social. Okay, I don't want to hear about it. Now it's like, I don't care about TV. Fast forward, I was just in Dallas at the Toy Association event in Dallas, the fall preview. They don't even want to hear about TV. They want all TikTok. What's your TikTok? You know, it's changed so drastically, and I've seen that shift. You know, if I tell a buyer I have 150 million views to our unique hashtag, we have 6.1 million likes, and we have 112,000 followers to our channel, that literally means nothing to most buyers. They have no idea where does that in the grand scheme. So what we started doing early on was we take screenshots of all of our primary competitors' TikTok platforms, and I put it literally into a PowerPoint, and I show, here's our engagement, here's all the numbers we have, and here's all of our, it's all open. It's all, and unlike normally, we have to pay for a service from whether it's Beacon or Blue Plate or whoever you work with, you have to pay a service to see how many GRPs your competitors are running and when they're running it. You know, it used to be this kind of black box. You'd have to pay a lot to figure out when are people doing the competitive analysis of when you're when everyone else is running their media and where they're running the media. Now I just go to your TikTok. I can see how much, what's your average views per post. And so I educate buyers. I utilize materials to educate buyers because I want them to understand there's a substance here that you need to understand. Let me compare it to all of our primary competitors in this category within toys, and you can see how much more engagement we have. And Chris, the last thing I'd say is it kind of relates to your question in terms of you're asking, how do you know it's working? You have the POS reads, obviously, that you get from retail that you can see if it's working or not. But also, you know, such a big part of the business now is direct consumer sales in Amazon, where by the minute I can see on my phone what Shopify or what Amazon or what my platform. So when I post something, I can see a direct reaction and learn from it right away because you're seeing those sales pop. And if we have a viral video, I can tell you, online sales are on Saturday and Sunday tend to be probably 30% lower than during the week. Because what are you doing during the week? You're sitting at your computer acting like you're working and you're like, I'm looking up stuff. I'm looking up stuff on Amazon while I'm supposed to be working, right? And that's Monday through Friday is when most of the sales are posting. So if I see sales taking off on a Saturday or a Sunday, that's, I'm like, what's going on here? And you know, sure enough, I'll go look and there'll be a post that we put on one platform, be it Instagram or TikTok, that's going viral or getting a real big response for whatever reason, which is a combination of an algorithm and just the content resonated with people that day. And we're always watching that and learning from it and trying to adapt.
What trade shows are you planning to exhibit at in 2023?
Our partner, License to Play, they will be doing all the gift shows. They do all the pretty much the whole gamut, Toy Fest West. They'll do Astra, Learning Express. I'll tend to do Atlanta gift show. Atlanta for the East Coast is a big gift show. We'll do Atlanta. The Vegas gift show has raised more. I might do the Vegas gift show. Certainly we'll do Toy Fest West. I think it's interesting. Toy Fair being moved from February to September is going to be a really, really unique case study this year because the specialty toy stores are such a huge part of our business for us. That's who you see at New York Toy Fair. Well, there is no event in February. So I think you're going to see bigger participation in the gift shows, New York Gift, Atlanta Gift, Dallas Gift this year. So we'll be attending those. And I think Toy Fest West is fast becoming an important show for those West Coast stores who need to do buying. And you know they don't want to wait till September. Toy Fair being absent from a buyer standpoint, I think a lot of buyers will be heading to the West Coast for Toy Fest West. And then obviously Astra Show, that's a big one for us. And then I guess there's no fall preview because Toy Fair will be the fall preview now in September, right?
Right. Okay, Josh, we're going to ask you now the question that we've asked every guest on season 4 of the Playground podcast. What was your favorite play experience growing up?
I have to say I was a really, really big Lego fanatic when I was a kid. All the different sets, the versatility of, you know, be able to make what, you know, the ship or the pirate ship or the building or whatever the theme of the place it was, but then the ability to take it all down and to remake new things out of it. That replayability of Lego was always so much fun and inspirational because you could really take Lego and turn it into whatever you want it to be. So I was a big Lego kid growing up.
Well, Josh Larzell, co-founder of Sky Castle Toys, this is amazing. I think it's great information for people who are still trying to figure out stuff that you're miles ahead of them on with the social media stuff. So thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Absolutely, guys. It was really an honor. I'll be back for season 5 if you want me. With love and
absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for listening. This is the Playground Podcast with me, Chris Byrne, my co-host and cohort, Richard Gottlieb. We are supported by global toy experts, The Toy Guy, Beacon Media Group, and the Hong Kong Trade Development Council. We'll see you next time.